I'm Jack Howe, host of the new Barron's Streetwise podcast on business and investing. Each week we hear from company chiefs and analysts about profound changes facing investors. We've heard from Disney's Bob Iger about the future of movies and theme parks, CVS's Larry Merlo about stores providing more health services, and Ford's Jim Hackett about how the pandemic might change the car business. Subscribe to Barron's Streetwise on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is your Tech News Briefing for Tuesday, June 2nd. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. From the Arab Spring to the Black Lives Matter movement, social media has long been a tool for protesters. The current protests over the death of George Floyd are no exception. Our reporter Sarah Needleman will join us to explain how platforms like Twitter and Facebook are being used by protesters right now, as well as by the police. That's coming up after these headlines. In Australia, media outlets that post their articles on Facebook are now liable for other users' defamatory comments on those posts. That's according to a ruling from a court in the state of New South Wales, which includes Sydney. The court says that media companies encourage and facilitate comments that can be seen by other users. As a result, they should be considered the publishers of those comments and responsible for their content. The media companies that were defendants in the original lawsuit say the move would strongly disincentivize media companies from posting articles and that they're considering an appeal to Australia's highest court. The decision could also threaten social media platforms themselves, which count on news articles for site traffic and ad revenue. We should note that one of the defendants in the case, News Corp Australia, is a subsidiary of News Corp, and News Corp, of course, owns Dow Jones, which publishes The Wall Street Journal. And some Facebook employees staged a virtual walkout on Monday and spoke up on Twitter. They were protesting CEO Mark Zuckerberg's decision to allow a post from President Trump to remain on the site. In the post, Trump used racially charged language, calling Minneapolis protesters thugs and including the phrase, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts." The employees and some outside academics say the post violates Facebook's rules about inciting violence. But Zuckerberg said last week that the post would stay up, even though he personally thought it was, quote, deeply offensive. The walkout and public outcry are unusual for Facebook employees who have in the past shared disagreements with company officials internally. A spokeswoman for Facebook said the company encourages employees to speak openly when they disagree with leadership and that Facebook will continue to seek employees' honest feedback in the future. Facebook employees aren't the only ones using social media to protest, and they're not the first to do it either. After the break, our reporter Sarah Needleman will explain some of the historical precedent. That's coming up next.
When the world is at a standstill, facts can move us forward. Facts help us make decisions and bring us together even as we're apart. The Wall Street Journal has the facts in these uncertain times. Get the latest on the coronavirus outbreak with free coverage of the crisis and its impact on the economy, politics, culture, and daily life. Find the clarity you need with America's most trusted news source. Visit WSJ.com and stay informed.
Just over a week ago, Darnella Frazier posted a video on Facebook. It showed the violent arrest of George Floyd, a black man who died after the officer who arrested him pinned him to the ground with a knee on his neck. That video has been shared over 52,000 times on Facebook alone and made its way to other social media platforms, too. Since then, those outlets have been used as a tool to spread awareness, dissent, and anger over Floyd's death and about the protests that have erupted in its wake across the country. This is not a new application of social media. For as long as they've been around, platforms like Twitter have been central in moments of upheaval. Our reporter, Sarah Needleman, joins us now to explain. Sarah, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Sarah, can you remind us of the kind of historical moment we're in right now?
Sure. Well, what's playing out, at least on social media, is almost real-time look at what's happening on the ground, because people are describing what they're seeing sometimes from their own apartments or literally while in the heat of protesting. And so they're sharing that information across Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and it's giving people who are tuning into those platforms a very close-up perspective of things. Certainly people are sharing it from their own different viewpoints, and in many cases, they're opposing viewpoints. But it is certainly a way for people to see what's going on that's different than traditional media.
Like we said before, this isn't new. We really saw this happen for the first time back in 2011. I remember during the Arab Spring how protesters in those countries were really utilizing social media in a way we'd never seen before. Can you talk to how that moment links to what we're seeing today?
Sure. I mean, that at that time, Twitter was only 5 years old, and it really became a central tool for protesters during that period. And it was a really one of the first times we saw people come together online. And so since then, you can look at, for example, the Black Lives Matter hashtag on Twitter that began in connection with the 2012 shooting death of an unarmed Florida teenager. And then last year, you had the footage of the attacks on a pair of mosques that left 50 people dead in New Zealand. And that was, you know, live streamed on Facebook. And so more and more people are using social media since then, and more people have smartphones, and they're capturing video footage and sharing it. And so back then in 2011, that was really one of the first big examples where we've seen social media play a role in protests. And now it's something we almost have come to expect.
We've obviously seen protests around the country in recent days. How is social media being used during these protests?
Sure. Well, in one way, it's being used to provide a real-time on-the-ground look at what's happening. It's also people are using it to warn one another, police are coming, you know, don't go to this area, avoid this street. And at least in one example, a user allegedly relayed LA Police Department activity warning that police were trying to lure protesters toward a certain area to conduct arrests. And this person urged his or her followers to reshare that tweet. You also see the opposite happening. The strategy is being used by law enforcement. The New York Police Department on Sunday said it was monitoring social media to track the protesters. So it goes both ways, but people are using it to share information and to share their viewpoints and also maybe help one another achieve whatever is their goal. So help the protesters avoid arrests and help the police conduct arrests.
We've seen huge spikes in users for Facebook and Twitter since the pandemic began. And obviously, these protests are now coming on the back of that. And these companies have been working really hard to put pressure and crack down on misinformation. What does battling misinformation look like when it comes to these protests? How are the tech companies responding right now?
Well, you know, it's, to some degree, they're overwhelmed because they are dealing with what's going on with the coronavirus. It is, you know, sort of a whack-a-mole situation where these things are taken down, but new ones are coming up. We spoke to Twitter, and they said the company was using its existing teams and tools to police any riot-related content on the site and, you know, take action on any coordinated attempts to disrupt the conversation. You'll see on Twitter, for example, there's some labels put up that say, you know, a series of photos being spread on Twitter are inaccurate, for example. Facebook's head of cybersecurity told the Journal that the company is using tools to combat misinformation around the protests while trying to avoid hindering people's ability to share information. So it's a fine line to walk. But they're certainly full force going out there and doing what they can to keep their platforms safe and prevent them from spreading false information, which can be pretty dangerous. What's interesting, or at least one of the professors I spoke to pointed out, that the riots have turned social media into a battle of opposing viewpoints. So there are people who are looking at the same event, but talking about it in very different ways. There's also a real problem with disinformation being spread. People are, one expert I spoke to said that people are posting images from protests that happened years ago that have nothing to do with Mr. Floyd's death. And people get so emotional and they're so upset about what they're seeing, they're not taking the time to pause and think, you know, gee, is this really legit? And so that's leading to the spread of misinformation because people, you know, think something's legit they repost it without realizing it's not. So it's not necessarily intentional, but that's how a lot of this spreads.
It's not just about misinformation, though. It's also about inciting violence. And this is something that Twitter has been in a bit of a dispute with the White House over. They labeled one of President Trump's tweets as inciting violence. So how are they taking a position on that when it comes to these protests and riots?
you know, Twitter has its own policies and rules on what you can or can't do. And so the company has deemed that particular tweet as going against its terms of service. And so because it is the president, they have decided to keep it up, but they have labeled it as such and it preventing people from commenting, retweeting, or liking that post.
How are they dealing with people who aren't the president?
Well, in the same way, if it's something that violates their terms of service, they may take it down or they may just label it and say, you know, here's for more information on that topic, which is what happened previously. In this case, though, with the president, with the issue of voter fraud. But these actions are taken against regular users as well. So there may be a fact check notice on other people's tweets, not just the president's.
Part of the thing that President Trump said last week was that he was alleging that conservative viewpoints specifically were being censored by social media companies. How does the tension over this dispute with the White House impact the way that they're responding right now?
Well, it certainly adds more pressure to Twitter to be thoughtful in how it handles the tweets that President Trump posts and others. It's a really sensitive topic right now, and they haven't beefed up their workforce, but they are working hard to make sure that when they need to apply fact check labels, that they do so appropriately. Twitter says that it has rules for what people can or can't post, and certain situations they will put fact check labels on tweets, and so they're doing that right now with tweets that are about the protests and anything else that just doesn't follow its policies.
That was our reporter, Sarah Needleman. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
And that was your Tech News Briefing. Don't forget that if you like this podcast, you can rate and review us in your app store. And if you want more news about Wall Street Journal podcasts, you can follow us on Twitter at WSJ Podcasts. I'm Kateri Yoakum for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.